Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Great to have you listening in again today. I'm Neil Stavem. We always appreciate the opportunity to get together here to talk about ways that we can apply biblical principles to daily life to help connect faith to life. That's our passion here at Faith Radio and at Connecting Faith. Ted Ross at the controls. And Ted, we're thankful to be working today. I think there were 1,700-some Target employees packing up boxes yesterday, the day before.
Yeah, while they do have a bit of a severance, we're keeping them in prayer for something next to come along.
Yeah, and by the way, we've had good conversations in the past with our good friend David Stark, talking about, you know, job transitions and those things. So, you know, if you maybe are in that situation looking for something or in a period of transition, or you know somebody is, you may want to just do a little search on our website, or go to the Connecting Faith show page, just Google, type in search David Stark, and you'll find some great audio there you could pass on to a friend.
Pretty easy. The search bar right at the top of our right-hand side of the main page, or just type Stark, and you'll find it.
We and that's not from the Avengers or any of that. That's
no,
that's
Tony.
That's not okay. All right. Appreciate that clarification.
Yes.
You know, jobs are one of the areas where we think a lot about leadership. Those that are in business in one form or another, it seems like there's lots of discussion about leadership and what it means to be responsible for the others underneath you. And we're going to talk about that today. And more importantly, about redefining leadership. That's the title of a book that came out not too long ago from our guest today, Joseph Stoll. Dr. Stoll serves now as president of Cornerstone University in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He also works with the RBC Ministries, partnering in media productions, outreach to pastors, writing, and a web ministry called Strength for the Journey. He's a wonderful writer, and he served for a time at as president of Moody Bible Institute. And if you, you know, go back in Christian radio at all, you know they had a wonderful radio program for a while as well. And we're honored to have him with us for a bit today to talk redefining leadership. The subtitle is Character-Driven Habits of Effective Leaders. In fact, just before we get our conversation going, Joe should mention that coming up in the second half of this show, we had an opportunity to talk to Carly Fiorina, and Carly, if you know her story, was the CEO of Hewlett-Packard for some years after 20 years in business, and there was quite a rocky time there, and her being let go. She's written a powerful book about it called Tough Choices, and so we're going to talk about some of those tough choices. But Dr. Stoll, welcome to Connecting Faith. Good to have you on with us right now. So.
Yeah, it's great to be on. I'm kind of like the warm-up band for
That's
the
it.
Big political person to
sure.
come. That's really great.
That's it, yeah.
Happy to fulfill that role.
All you need to do is get on base, Joe, and Carly drive it home. So
that's good. Well, I hope to get to first base with you guys. It's an honor to be on your program.
Yeah, let's you know, one of the things that I caught or reading the book was the statement, how you lead reflects who you are. Let's start with that. Why is that true?
Well, maybe I can even take one step farther back, Neil, on that into a little larger picture that then defines that statement.
Yeah.
You know, I think most leadership books and most leaders aspire to get something done, to do something, to produce. And then there's always the comparison, isn't it, to others who are highly successful, and I want to become highly successful as they are. And a lot of leadership books actually teach us how to do something and be productive. And my concern was in writing Redefining Leadership is that obviously leaders need to accomplish something, right? Mm-hmm. But what we're missing in that whole sequence that I just spoke about is the fact that it's not just what you do, but it's who you are and how you do it as you accomplish and become successful in whatever enterprise that you're leading. So it's those two elements that I think are very critical and often ignored. And when they're ignored, ultimately as leaders, we end up probably doing more damage than good. At least we have that potential. So the whole thrust of the thesis is, you know, who I am, character as I lead, and then how I lead, how I treat people, the processes, are critically important if we are to be really, truly successful leaders. And it's the harder job. I mean, it's easy to skip who I am and how I do what I do and just pull all the levers to become successful, you know, and leave body bags all over the place and people don't count. We're just getting the job done. So I think personally, this emphasis is a lacking emphasis, so critical. And I have to say as well that at the core of this is the example of the most unlikely leader in history, and that's Jesus Christ. I mean, him, the magnetic power to become so phenomenally successful. So a lot of the book really is rooted in, well, in the patterns and the ways and the wisdom of Jesus Christ in developing who we are and how we lead.
We'll look more of the example of Jesus in leadership in a moment. But, Joel, maybe just some thoughts about some of the assumptions that we make. And we talk about success. I mean, we probably have a few delusions about, well, bigger is not always better, right? I mean, that's it's hard to really be kind of counterculture and with so much emphasis on what the world thinks is successful.
Yeah, exactly. If you really watch the patterns of Jesus, Neil, they're all counterintuitive, you know, and I try to base the book on the kingdom principles that he taught, and they're all counterintuitive. So thinking about a lot of these patterns, you feel like, wow, those are so upside down. You know, that's upside down. That's upside down. But actually, if we're theologically correct, we're upside down. And what Jesus comes in, like, I don't know if you ever like did toast in the morning, Neil, and you slather it with butter and then just cover it with strawberry jam, and you're walking across the kitchen to the table, and all of a sudden it slips off the plate, and it always lands how?
Yeah, it's a jam
upside
side down,
right?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, right. And it's always a mess, you know, and spatula and takes us off the floor and tries to flip us right side up. And I think that good, effective leadership is permitting Jesus to move our instincts, for instance, from bigger is better, right? Moving our instincts to what is correct and right side up according to him and his kingdom, so that in the long term, we may not have done something bigger, but we may have done something far better for Christ and his kingdom, given how we have led, leading from our character and leading according to the ways of Jesus Christ. And again, I say it's really the harder way. There's a note when Jesus talked about two builders, and all leaders are builders, right? You know, the one builder built a house real fast, and it was spectacular. So he's the winner, and this other poor guy's dripping sweat trying to get his house built, and he's digging down deep foundations. But in the end, Jesus said the guy that looked like the winner was really the loser, because what he built couldn't stand the test of time, and the infrastructure was not strong enough to come against the tides of what was happening in the world. But it was that leader, builder, who built deeper, worked harder, that had the ultimate success in the end. And I think if I can just develop that a little bit, like, I think in Christ's leadership is that people count. So it's harder to lead an organization where you're really valuing people. It's much easier to lead an organization where people are cogs in the wheels and they're only instruments to get the big bottom line done and get the big success done. And they really don't count. The leader counts because it's his industry or her industry, and they get to get all the applause. But the minions, you know, the people, the slaves who are doing the oars down in the galley, they don't count. That's easier. That's easier to run a business like that or to run a ministry like that. But to run a ministry where people actually count, and one of your visions is not just to build a big business, to build better people. And working to build people up as they are serving the enterprise, such that there's like so many illustrations of why character-driven leadership is so much more challenging, but in the end, so much more rewarding.
Just think about, you know, Jesus' words. If there are four words that should probably shake us, no matter what level of leadership we're in, it's Jesus said, "Not so with you." I mean, what a powerful line that is.
Yeah, but it shall not be so among you. And that's great. Thank you for opening that door, because that's Matthew chapter 20. It's one of my favorite stories, where James and John have a leadership impulse. All right. They come and they want to be appointed as the big leaders in the kingdom, the one to sit on the right and the left of the king. Those were the people with power, with leverage, who had the ear of the king. These were the top leadership spots in the kingdom that they were asking for. And what I think is interesting, they play really low ball because they bring their mom to ask the favor, you know. And the other 10 disciples are like so ticked that these guys have asked for the big leadership positions in the kingdom that they're like moved with indignation, Matthew tells us. And then Jesus gathers them to himself and he said, you know what? The princes of the Gentiles work like this, lording over other people, pulling the levers of power for their own benefit. This is a pagan way of leadership. And then he said, but it shall not be so among you. If you really want to lead in my kingdom, you have to count yourself to be a servant. And then he said, even as I came. So here's our king, the greatest leader that we've ever known. Even as I came, not to be served, but to serve and to give myself a ransom for many. And so I think maybe that's just one of the starting points. And I have a whole section in the book on shepherd leadership. And I like to call it shepherd leadership because that's a great metaphor if you understand what a shepherd is. And I think when we think of servant leadership, it's such a worn-out phrase, isn't it? You and I were talking earlier about that. You know, everybody yawn or servant leadership. But it is so key. It is right at the heart of the matter. In fact, I think that if you're really running your enterprise as a leader biblically and in a kingdom way, then organizational charts are upside down, right? So organizational charts are this pyramid, right?
Yeah.
I get to be on the top. Yay for me. You know, everybody applaud for me. I have the power. But if we're listening to what Christ said, but it shall not be so among you, you got to flip that. And I'm at the bottom of that. The pinnacle of the pyramid is at the bottom, and I am serving every level above me. And actually, it's the people at that long top level that are really carrying out the mission. And that's one of many ways in which we need to think about leadership if we're going to have truly long-term results of effective leadership in building the houses that God's called us to build.
We'll talk more about, you know, what does shepherd leadership look like? There's some important characteristics there. We'll also look to Jesus' teaching in the Sermon on the Mount for some insight, getting some good perspective on redefining leadership. That's the title of the book from Dr. Joe Stoll. Subtitle is Character-Driven Habits of Effective Leaders. And it's published by Zondervan. Joe Stoll is president of Cornerstone University in Grand Rapids and has written a number of books and a gifted speaker and kind enough to give us a few minutes today. So we're going to continue in just a moment with more from Joe Stoll here as we talk leadership and what it means to be a shepherd leader, applicable for all of us. Stay tuned. Past the hour, and talking today with Dr. Joe Stoll, who's president of Cornerstone University in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's authored a number of books, including The Trouble with Jesus, Following Christ, Simply Jesus and You. And the one we're referencing today is called Redefining Leadership, Character-Driven Habits of Effective Leaders. And we mentioned, Joel, you're talking a little bit about shepherd leadership. There was, thought maybe to set it up, you could, I noticed in the book there was a little acronym, RHIP. I thought that sort of sets up maybe the contrast between today's society and what Jesus talked about and Peter talked about, being a shepherd.
Yeah, exactly. RHIP, rank has its privileges. I remember one time going somewhere and flying there instead of driving there. And somebody said to me, wow, well, RHIP, I'd have no clue what he's talking about. What does that mean? He said, rank has its privileges. And I think a lot of times as leaders, once we ascend to a platform of leadership, we begin to sense that I have this rank, so I have these privileges. Interesting, isn't it, Neil, that suddenly that sounds like this is all about me. So I think one of the, you don't even need to read a secular leadership book about this, but at the core of our fallenness, Once a leader ascends to a platform of leadership and power, the temptation for it to be all about him or all about her is so consuming. And that's why I think leaders who are going to lead in kingdom ways need to be constantly vigilant of that. I go back to the temptations of Christ, where Satan tried to undermine his leadership potential and power right at the very beginning. And when he said, "Hey, you're hungry, turn these stones to be bread," it was basically, "Use your power to bless yourself." And if Christ had ever started that pattern, he could have taken himself down off the cross. And I've often challenged students as I talk about this leadership reality. I dare you to go to find one place in Scripture where Jesus used his power and the platform of his leadership to bless himself. That never happened once, because with him, rank didn't have its privileges, but rank had its opportunities to serve and bless others. Now, I don't know what that acronym is. We could make a cool acronym out of that, probably. But it's such a pivotal point. And I think if I can just kind of grab a hold of this interview for a second here, Neil, that goes back to a very fundamental identity of a character-driven leader, one who's seeking to lead with the power and the outcomes of Christ in the kingdom. And that is the matter of our identity. If I'm, God, for reasons best known to himself, has put me in leadership positions my whole ministry and, career life. And it's easy to think I'm the leader. I think that kind of identity of yourself is very destructive. Last night I was with a group of 45 student leaders, and they were asking me questions, and they asked me, "What have I learned about leadership?" And one of the things I shared with them, Neil, was that I learned that I am not first and foremost a leader, but first and foremost, I am a follower. I am a follower of Jesus Christ, and he advises my leadership. So I'm a follower leader, and I think that any leader who wants to really maximize the outcomes of their work needs to start with a whole new identity, and that is, I am a follower. I'm a follower of Christ. If that's not the case, then my leadership identity will say, I am the leader. I'm going to do what it feels like, right, my instincts, and, it's a scary thing for me to lead by my instincts, because I'm fallen, and my instincts aren't always on target. And so if I said nothing else in this interview, I would call every person who's given the stewardship of leadership to really embrace the identity that they are not truly a leader, but truly a follower of Jesus Christ. And as they follow him, then he advises their leadership. He leads them in ways of effective leadership. And so in seeing that rank has its privileges, it was never that way with Jesus. So as a follower of Jesus, as a leader, I don't buy that. I can't live as a leader like that.
Are there things that maybe you have found over your course of various leadership responsibilities, things that maybe patterns, habits you've gotten into that you do personally that help you cultivate and maybe reiterate that that identity as first and foremost a follower?
Yeah, I love reading the narratives. I try to keep Jesus, his ways and his will and his wisdom paramount in my mind. So I love the exercise of periodically reading through the gospel narratives and watching Jesus work with people, watching Jesus react to people, watching his grace and mercy and his authority, how he handles his authority, and just staying close to Jesus and his will, the real Jesus, the authentic Jesus, keeps me sharp in terms of leading as a follower of Jesus Christ. And then also, the Lord has interesting ways of reproving us as leaders. So criticism is always a challenge. I mean, if you're going to lead, you're going to be criticized. It just goes with the territory. But I take the humility of Christ. Now, he was never wrong. But, then I begin to look at criticism like, well, maybe God's telling me something here. Is this a reproof to me? Is this a reproof to the way that I'm leading? Is there something for me to learn here? So the humility of Christ, the reliance of Christ on his Father. I think one of the, and I deal with this in the book, one of the worst things a leader can become is self-sufficient. I think that any time a leader stops singing that good old song, I need thee, oh, I need thee, every hour I need thee, the leader's in big trouble. And I'm just fascinated by the fact that Jesus came and was not self-sufficient, but was so reliant on his Father. He needed his Father's direction. He needed his Father's input. That's why he prayed. He was willing to do his Father's will. So the whole matter of becoming God-reliant as opposed to self-reliant as a leader. And, you know, I know that we don't have a lot of time for all the ways in which being a follower of Jesus totally changes my leadership paradigm, but those are just a few.
Yeah. And just as you talk about reliance, I mean, you do go through toward the end of the book of reviewing Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, which is, if you read it sort of with leader's eyes, you'll find it pretty challenging. You know, blessed are the poor in spirit.
Well, it's weird. Like, yeah. Seriously, like, if those are the kingdom, the hallmarks of a kingdom person, which they are, then they need to be the hallmark of me as a leader, as I lead in kingdom ways. So you start right out with blessed are the poor in spirit. So when's the last time you read a leadership book that said, okay, here's the profile of a good leader. They have to be poor in spirit. You know, that never makes the profile. But in reality, that poor in spirit really means to recognize my fallenness and my frailness, and that I am poor in spirit, and that I need help. I need to reach out for help, so that I'm not self-reliant, but rather I become God-reliant as a leader. So, and I go through several of the early blessed are those, which are like totally counterintuitive to leadership profiles, and demonstrate the power in those particular beatitudes in a leader's life.
Well, our time is getting away from us, and but we did want to grab what time we could, because it's important discussion. And I recommend the book. It's called Redefining Leadership: Character-Driven Habits of Effective Leaders, and it's going to be valuable to you at whatever level or position God has placed you in. We do have 5 copies to give away, by the way, and we'll do that here on the phone at 877-933-2484 if you want to be one of the first handful to call us. We'd love to put this in your hands. 877-933-2484. As we mentioned, we've got a conversation with Carly Fiorina coming up in the second half hour. But Joe, just want to thank you again for your reflection on this, and for your heart to keep this before us, because it's an issue that we can get off the rails pretty easily on this.
Yeah, thank you, Neil. It's a joy to be on your program. Thanks for all you do for the kingdom. I know that all the stations on your network, what a blessing you are to so many people, keeping them on the track and keeping all of us on the track. So good work.
We look forward to connecting again here down the road. Dr. Joseph Stoll, president of Cornerstone University in Grand Rapids, and he's a best-selling author, and we're honored to have him on with us today as we talk about the book Redefining Leadership: Character-Driven Habits of Effective Leaders. It's published by Zondervan. If you missed part of this interview, you can always catch the audio online. We post the interviews online on our website at myfaithradio.com. Click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you can get a chance to listen to it and pass it on to a friend. So if you'd like a copy of the book, it's Redefining Leadership. Give us a call, 877-933-2484, and then stay tuned for a little conversation. We'll talk about tough choices, and we'll get to Carly Fiorina just ahead. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. We spent the first half of our program talking about some of the principles and important character aspects of leadership from a godly perspective. I want to talk about leadership in the trenches next, as we get a first-hand look at the life of the former president and CEO of Hewlett-Packard. We're looking forward to spending time together now with Carly Fiorina. She is chairman of the Unlocking Potential Project, and from 1999 to 2005 was president and CEO of Hewlett-Packard, becoming the first woman CEO of a Fortune 20 company,
Before that, spent nearly 20 years as a telecommunications executive, and her memoir, Tough Choices, was a New York Times bestseller, and we're honored to have her with us today here on the Connecting Faith. And Carly, just want to maybe start out with Tough Choices, the name of your best-selling book. Recently someone, I think I read or heard someone suggested that tough choices are all that remains for the executive leadership because all the easy choices have been made or can be made by others. So what does it take to make tough choices?
Well, thank you for having me. I do think that if a leader is going to lead, they have to make tough choices. There are people in positions of leadership who don't lead, and they just kind of make do with the way things are. And in that way, leadership and management are crucially different because managers do the best they can within existing constraints and conditions, whatever those are. Leaders change constraints and conditions. They see possibilities. They seize possibilities. And as Margaret Thatcher once noted, you can't lead from the middle of the crowd, which means that leaders see things, if they're good leaders, before others do. And they seize those possibilities and make the tough choices that are required. There are people who are in positions of leadership who don't decide anything at all or don't do anything. They manage, in other words. But of course, a failure to make tough choices is a decision in and of itself. And honestly, we see it on the world stage today where people are not making the tough choices necessary to combat evil, for example. And that's a decision because consequences flow from that indecision.
I know in your book, the epilogue in your book, you talk about the importance of not only leadership, but collaboration. And certainly as you talk about, issues on a global scale in the political realm, it doesn't seem like collaboration is much in evidence these days.
Well, isn't that true? And I think it's why so many people are tired of politics, because in the rest of the world, in the rest of life, the only way to solve problems is through collaboration. And Lord knows we have plenty of problems to solve. You know, everything worth doing is a team effort. Everything. Let's talk about faith. Jesus had disciples. The point is, all leaders need a team. All problems to be solved require collaboration as well as leadership. And so when people look at the political process and see lots of arguing, lots of vitriol, lots of words, not a lot of collaboration, not a lot of problem solving, and not a lot of results, they get frustrated.
You know, your book, Tough Choices, of course, recounts your amazing journey in telecommunications and then becoming a CEO of Hewlett-Packard and then the rather sudden and really difficult loss of that. Also, you spent some time, pursuing politics and had a tough race back in, California and losing a daughter, a stepdaughter. Talk a little bit about, the difficulties that come our way. I mean, obviously, we get toughened in our character, but how do you not get bitter, but kind of strive to be better? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I started out my career as a secretary in a little 9-person real estate firm. And all along the way, people took a chance on me. People gave me a helping hand. I've been enormously blessed and enormously fortunate in my life. I never set out to become a CEO. I just found that I liked tough challenges. The tougher the challenge, the better I liked it, because I found that when you gather together with people in a team and you unlock the potential of everybody on the team, and most people have far more potential than they realize, you can achieve great things. And so all throughout my life, honestly, yes, I faced tough challenges in business, but I also felt very blessed and very fortunate. My departure from Hewlett-Packard was abrupt. It was a matter of principle for me. We had board members who were leaking confidential information to the newspapers. That is conduct unbecoming a board member. I said, either you have to leave the board or I have to leave the board because I can't conduct business in this way. After 6 years, they were trying to make decisions that I didn't agree with. And so all that happened very suddenly. They were nervous about their positions and so ousted me from mine. What's interesting is that they asked me to say that I was retiring because I had achieved all of my objectives. And, of course, that wouldn't have been true. So I thought it was more important to stand on principle and to tell the truth. And that was a hard time. A lot of bad things got said about me. But then later when I battled cancer, my faith sustained me through that. My family sustained me through that. There were so many helping hands that I relied upon. When we lost our daughter to the demons of addiction, honestly, it was a personal relationship with Jesus Christ that saved me and saved our family. But all throughout those times, whether they were good or bad, I have felt God's loving presence. I have felt the kindness and compassion of strangers. I have been lifted up by helping hands. And so I have come to know that tough times are part of life. They are part of what draws us closer to God. They are part of what gives us wisdom and empathy for others.
You know, I was recalling when you were telling there was dark days in Hewlett-Packard when things suddenly abruptly ended, that you found yourself kind of going back to reciting the Lord's prayers, kind of as a foundational start for the day. I mean, there's some value to really hanging on to those bedrock core beliefs, isn't it?
Yes, there is. In fact, I don't know how people without faith get through hard times. I guess that's why some people become bitter. I have said the Lord's Prayer every day all of my life, but it takes on special meaning in tough times. When our daughter was battling addictions and later lost her life, I added to that the 23rd Psalm. I read my daily scripture every day and take comfort and inspiration from it. And honestly, I have come to believe that people of faith make better leaders, because I think faith gives us humility. We know that no one of us is any better than any other one of us. We are all made in God's image. I think it gives us empathy. We know that any one of us can fall, but every one of us can be redeemed. And I also think that faith gives us hope. Hope for the future, hope in our fellow man, and hope that things can be better. And I think all those things, humility, empathy, and hope, are really vital to effective leadership.
I'm curious, have you found ways to integrate your faith maybe more fully into your professional life? Has that been a process over time, or was that something that, you know, you had those core convictions, as you said, early on? But I'm just, you know, at this stage in your life, do you sort of approach it differently?
Well, I was very fortunate to have a mother and father who instilled in me these core convictions. But of course, as you grow older and face more challenge, you come to realize in a different way how important core values and faith really are. So one of the things I know is that we must always tell the truth, even if that is difficult. That's why I told the truth about my departure from HP. It's why I tell the truth about whatever has happened in my life. But I think I also have come to know in really profound ways that we need to accept and rely upon God's will. We are not meant to know the future. We are meant to live each day using all of our God-given gifts. When I faced cancer, I think I learned in a new and profound way that truly life is not measured in time. It's not measured in wealth. It's not measured in fame or power or position. It's measured in love, in moments of grace, and in positive contribution.
Carly Fiorina is my guest today. She is the was the president and CEO of Hewlett-Packard, becoming the first woman CEO of a Fortune 20 company back from 1999 to 2005. She's now chairman of the Unlocking Potential Project. Her book, Tough Choices, is a New York Times bestseller. And she's also involved in as a global ambassador to Opportunity International. And we'll talk more about that in a moment here on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, the conversation centered around leadership. Talking today with Carly Fiorina about potential. In fact, she's now chairman of the Unlocking Potential Project. We want to find out more about that in a moment. But, Carly, one of the areas of service that you got involved in after your time at HP was Opportunity International. And I'm curious, because that's dealing with microfinance, you were a leader of one of the top corporations in the world, and overseeing billions of dollars, and now working with kind of the poorest of the poor, microfinance. Are there transferable skills from the top to the bottom?
Well, the short answer is absolutely yes. You know, we were talking a couple minutes ago about integrating faith, and this is sort of a good example of it. When I was a little girl, my mother told me, she was my Sunday school teacher this particular year, she told me, what you are is God's gift to you. What you make of yourself is your gift to God. And I know and learn over and over and over that everyone has God-given gifts, and too few people have the chance to use them. So what does microfinance do? Opportunity International is a Christian-based organization. We're the largest microfinance organization in the world. We've lent about $8 billion, $150 at a time. The vast majority, 93% of our clients are women. What do? We realize that every person, regardless of their circumstances, has God-given gifts. And what we're doing through microfinance, as well as through the right support and training, is to say to each of these people, you have value. You have gifts, and we are going to help you find your gifts and use them so that you can build a life of dignity and purpose and meaning. I was just in the slums of New Delhi meeting with some of our clients. The slums of New Delhi are very grim places. You know, mountains of trash and sewage in the streets and marauding animals and people piled on top of each other. And yet, if you look into the eyes of these women, our clients, what you see are eyes of hopefulness, eyes of focus and determination. They want to build a life of dignity and purpose and meaning for themselves and their families. And we extend a hand and tools and training and take a chance on them. And that's inspiring because it reminds us that no one of us is any better than any other one of us.
You know, I was thinking I was reflecting on your book, Tough Choices, in today's society with sort of the political kind of lawyer class sort of running parallel to the rest of us, that, you know, the burden of regulation, while we hear those phrases from time to time, that, you know, whether you're at a top, five company in the world, or you're in a microfinance, that there are so many things that limit our opportunities, aren't there? I mean, talk about some of the challenges to provide freedom for the opportunity to actually grow and develop.
Well, you know, it's true. Everyone has potential, usually far more than they realize, and too few people get a chance to use their potential, and it so often is because of government or someone who is invested in a particular system. So let's just look at this country for a moment. Of course, the opportunities here are far different than they are in India. This is actually the greatest country on the face of the earth because more people from more places could realize their potential and seize possibilities. On the other hand, today what we see is that government has gotten so complicated, so complex, so powerful, so costly, that actually it is crushing the potential of the nation in very real ways. So if you're a very large company like Hewlett-Packard, it was $90 billion when I left. We doubled its revenues. I could deal with all that complexity. But the little nine-person real estate firm that I started out in, they can't deal with it because they don't have the resources to hire all those lawyers and accountants and lobbyists. And so what we see is little companies are going out of business. We're now destroying more small businesses than we're creating for the first time in U.S. history. And that means there are fewer jobs because small businesses create two-thirds of the new jobs and employ half the people. And if there aren't jobs, then people don't have the opportunity to live a life of dignity and purpose and meaning, because work brings dignity to our lives, just as family brings purpose and faith brings meaning. And we also have too many people who are trapped in this web of dependence that has been woven over decades by government, where instead of looking in someone's eyes and saying, you have value and you can live a life of dignity and purpose and meaning, and we are going to help you do so, people are told, as they're trapped in this web, you know what, you really can't build that kind of life, so don't worry, we're going to take care of you. And it is the height of disregard, I think, for the sanctity of human life and for the gifts that every single person possesses.
What's your hope with the organization Unlocking Potential, the Unlocking Potential Project?
Well, Unlocking Potential is very much focused on engaging people, particularly women, in the political process because, you know, whether we like it or not, politics impacts every single one of our lives. I thought it was very interesting that Franklin Graham the other day said that he wanted to encourage more Christians to get involved in politics. And it's actually vitally important because politics has gotten sort of taken over by professional politicians. Women, I say, we're focused mostly on women because we know that women tend to disengage from the political process. They don't like the tone of it, the anger of it, the vitriol of it, the lack of problem solving of it. And yet, women are now 53% of voters. We're more than half the nation. In other words, we're the majority. So if women can get engaged in the political process, not necessarily as candidates, perhaps as advocates, perhaps as voters, perhaps as people who are willing to be persuasive in their conversation with others and advocate for conservative solutions to our problems in the nation, because frankly, only conservative solutions are really going to work. If we can get more women engaged in that process, our nation will be better off.
Carly, your business story has been Tough Choices, the story of your experience in telecommunications and then the moving into the CEO position of Hewlett-Packard. But it's been spun by the press throughout the course of your ups and downs. And I'm wondering if that, and you know, you've been involved in some political campaigns. What does it take to sort of get the message out when others have a different agenda and hold influence? I mean, it does seem like there are agendas that are in play all the time. So how do you really get your message out?
Well, yes, there are agendas in play all the time. And let's just start with one of the advantages of business is that facts and numbers matter. You know, in politics, it's only about words and people twist words. But in business, results count. And so in my particular case, we took Hewlett-Packard from $45 billion to $90 billion. We took its growth rate from 2% to 9%. We tripled its rate of innovation to 11 patents a day. We quadrupled cash flow. We went from lagging behind in every product category to leading in every product category and market segment. In other words, we transformed a company into a leader with all of the positive that that implies, including job creation. And so I just stick to those facts. Because the facts are undeniable and public and clear. I think what we need to realize about politics is that I really think there is a fight now going on for the future and the direction of this nation. It's why I'm giving very serious consideration to running for president. I think our nation is at a pivotal point where there are a group of people who believe that some are better than others, some are smarter than others, and therefore some are going to decide for others and some are going to take care of others. And that is just exactly the opposite of what I think we as people of faith believe, that we are all equal in the eyes of God, and that the highest calling of leadership, and I have learned this over the course of my life, the highest calling of leadership is to unlock potential in others. And so I think every one of us has to stand up and fight for what we believe and fight for the future of this nation, because I think we are in a fight now.
You've experienced leadership at a variety of levels and not always honest and truthful. Talk about the importance of integrity and the personal character in leadership at whatever level one finds himself in.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people who are in positions of leadership who are not transparent, who are not truthful, and who don't have character. Unfortunately, we see it all the time. Of course, they're not leaders. They're just in positions of leadership. So my definition of values or character is what you do when no one's looking and you don't think anyone is ever going to find out. Of course, God is looking. And so it's all about how do we choose to conduct ourselves when it's just us and our Savior. And I truly believe that over time, character wins out. You know, my mother used to say to me, the mills of God grind exceedingly slow, but they grind exceedingly fine. And I think that is true. I think character wins out in the end in many, many ways. And people who are truthful and transparent will be rewarded over time. It's not always obvious in the here and now, but it is the way we are meant to conduct ourselves. And I also think that in order for people to trust a leader, the leader must be transparent, because that's the only way people see over time. Do their actions match their words? What is their character? What is their motivation? What is their competence?
Carly Fiorina is the chairman of the Unlocking Potential Project and was the president and CEO of Hewlett-Packard. Her book, Tough Choices, is a bestseller and recommended reading. Carly, great to visit with you. Thank you so much for joining us today on Connecting Faith.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation.
And if you missed part of our conversation today, either with Joe Stoll or Carly Fiorina, you can listen to it again online or pass it on to a friend. Go to myfaithradio.com and then click on Connecting Faith.